Well, hello there, and welcome back to the Nerd Podcast. That's Never Ending Retro Dialogue. I'm Jordan.
I'm Doug.
Today we have a what I imagine will be an action packed, jam packed to the hilt episode.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know.
Don't oversell it, man.
Yeah. we're gonna be talking about our favorite comic book writers and artists.
Yes, and if you'll notice, for all those playing at home. We don't have any special guests today.
That's true.
You're going to have to suffer through just listening to us blather on now.
Yeah.
So, ha, the joke's on you.
It's been a couple of back-to-back guests.
Yeah.
We'll have to get some more on there. I think it helps spread the awareness of the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We'll have to book a cameo of somebody to promote our podcast.
Ooh.
Somebody there. Famous, yeah.
There, yeah. Yeah. How much does that cost?
It depends on the actor. Some, yeah. I know, like, you know Christopher Judge?
Yeah.
He's like $500.
Oh.
But some people are less than $100.
Oh, okay.
So let's afford it.
Let's shoot for those.
Yeah, we can afford it. Friend of the show. So.
But yeah, so comic book artists and writers.
Yeah, and I think some of them will be both artists and writers probably.
Absolutely. Agreed, because I started having problems. I'm going to say from the start, I had a bit of a struggle because you know how my mind works. I like to categorize things. It's easier for me to discuss, I guess.
Yeah.
But my biggest struggle was I was battling sentimentality mm-hmm. with what is actual, these are my favorite, right?
Yeah.
For example, I grew up reading a lot of the Batman Brave and the Bolds. I hope I'm saying his name right. Jim Aparo.
I think it's Aparo. I don't know.
Did a lot of the art for those. Yeah. And so it's just when I see those, it just kind of, you know, harkens back to a earlier, simpler time. But I don't know that I would put him in the category of favorite artist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I suppose there's the whole, what he did, you know, does light something in me. So,
yeah.
And similarly, Dick Giordano did a lot of Batman stuff, in the era when I was reading as a kid, you know, my dad had them and stuff. So, I'm going to give them a couple honorable mentions just because they helped spark the love of comics.
Sure.
Because the Batman Brave and the Bold is one of my favorite series. Still is. I love it because they're self-contained.
Yep.
You get a story. Especially the very earlier ones, they're more, I don't want to say campy, but you know, They're not the dark, serious stuff. So, yeah. I started a list. I've got my artists on here. And then I started writing the authors. And then I realized I didn't give myself any room for what they did. Because why talk about people if you can't at least say a few of the things that they've worked on, right?
Sure.
So, we'll see how I end up going with this. Another guy that falls into the first category, I had stopped reading comics for a long time. And then, as I believe I've talked on here before, and then, my buddy Brett, who I worked with when I first moved to Columbus, worked at, the Laughing Ogre too. Mm-hmm. He kind of got me back into comics, and one of the first things he gave me was Preacher.
Right.
And so Steve Dillon, that's when I was first introduced to him. Now, I've not read a whole lot of other stuff, I don't think, where Steve Dillon did do the art, except for maybe Hellblazer. But yeah, so again, it's one of those things where just kind of holds a special place because that's what really got me back into it, because the art and Preacher. The story, too, by Garth Ennis is just, it's crazy bonkers.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that comics could be like that, because I hadn't read them for so long. Yeah. I always thought they were still just the goofy, campy, you know, stuff.
Yeah, I would say I had a similar experience with Preacher. It really awakened me to what comics could do, because that was one that my friend lent me, and I read it in, like, I read a lot of Preacher. Like, I read all of Preacher in, like, a month or two. One thing about Steve Dillon's art is that, in Preacher at least, he made people look ugly.
Yes.
And I had never really seen that before, because in comic books, everybody's so perfect looking.
Yes.
And it's like,
only the bad guys are ugly.
Right, only the bad guys. But in Preacher, everybody's kind of off looking.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, they look like real people. And that's something that I'll always remember about Preacher.
Yeah, they all have flaws.
Yeah.
Loved Preacher. That's definitely one that I'm sure we talked about that in our books you should read if you don't like comics.
Yeah, definitely. Either that one or the non-superhero one, or probably both.
Yeah, it could be. Who knows? We probably should keep track of this stuff.
There's somebody keeping track out there.
Just tell us what the score is, guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, so do you want to get started? Do you want to talk about artists first or writers?
Artist starts with an A, so that's the first letter of the alphabet. So I guess we'll go with artist first.
Sounds good. Although authors...
Oh, no.
Is AU, though, so artist would still go first. So there you go. Oh, gosh. So who you got? Who inspires you?
Oh, who inspires
me? Let's go with that first, because I think there could be different answers. Who inspires you when you see their art, when you see their name?
Well, let's see. I'm inspired by a lot of cartoonists, so they write and draw their own stuff. Mm-hmm. But in terms of just artists like that work just on the art stuff, gosh, I got to think, everybody that's popping into my mind also writes their own stuff.
Yeah.
So this is hard for me.
Hey, just go with it, man.
Yeah. Well, let's get one out of the way that's both, but I'm going to just say this because I know he's going to be on your list.
Uh-huh.
And he's a friend of the show.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go with Jeff Lemire.
Jeff Lemire, big friend of the show.
Big friend of the show.
Yeah. What's a cameo for Jeff Lemire cost?
That's a good question. I don't think he's on cameo.
Oh, darn. Okay.
Ow, the pop can just pulled my mustache whiskers.
Uh-oh.
Ow. I'm in pain. So Jeff Lemire, his art... Let's just talk about his art for a second.
Yes.
His art is so unique to me. And so, like you said, it does inspire me to want to draw. So I guess that would meet that criteria. And his watercoloring also. So Sweet Tooth, for example. I don't think he drew... Did he draw Sweet Tooth? I can't remember.
That is a great question.
I'm thinking he drew the covers, but...
Let me pull the book right here.
Yeah.
Jeff Lemire Compendium for Sweet Tooth.
Yeah.
Story and art. Yep. Okay. And then he also did some of the color, as did Matt Kent and Jose Villarrubia.
Oh, yeah, Jose. But yeah, so he's up there for me because his art is so unique. And so I don't think it's like everybody's cup of tea. It should be, but... So he's like the first person that popped off my head. So I can talk about him again in a minute as a writer. But as an artist, he's one of those guys that when I see the work, I know instantly that it's him.
Yes. Very distinctive style.
Yeah, there's really nobody that draws like him. I would say Matt Kent reminds me of him, or they remind me of each other a little bit. But Jeff Lemire for me, like, what's that really sad one that I read that was like, it was about like that strong man...
Oh gosh.
It was like the first thing I ever read by him. Well, no, I think I read Sweet Tooth and then I read that, but it was sad. And
it was, and now I can't think of it. I have read it as well. Yeah,
I think, but I don't know. But anyway, so he's very, and like Underwater Welder is like, and Essex County,
yep.
Just two things in my mind that are just like, they make me want to make comics.
I believe he did the art for Royal City too.
Yes.
Don't think he did the art for Family Tree. Now I've got to look that up because I don't want to be wrong. For shame if I'm wrong. Actually, I think I might have Family Tree right here. I do not. I thought I did. I wonder if I've went that out. But yeah, so his art is very, would you describe it as unrefined?
Yeah, like rough, raw kind of.
It's almost sketchy. It's like someone is doodling and they're doing sketch work for a storyboard, but then that's where it stays.
Yeah.
But I think, especially when he does the art for his stories, it fits the story really well. With stories like Gideon's Fall, which we'll talk about as him as a writer, but he had a different artist on that. I don't think his art style would have matched the tone of that story as well. So that's the one thing. But yeah, you're right. Jeff's Mr. Lemire. But he's a friend of the show, so we call him Jeff.
So we call him Jeff.
Yeah, his art is unmistakable.
Yeah.
He's one of those ones where it's like there's several that as we go down the line, you'll hear that phrase a lot. You know when it's that person just because of how it looks. But yeah, that's a good one to start with.
Well, I just thought, get the obvious one out of the way.
There we go.
I have some other ones that have popped in my head that are not so obvious now, so.
Well, then go ahead.
Well, so I don't know if you are a student of Mobius at all.
Uh-uh.
Oh, Mobius was a French artist. His real name was Jean Girard.
Okay.
He did, I don't know what people would know him for. The World of Edenia was like his big thing, mm-hmm. I think, that people in America would know him for. But he also did like Silver Surfer Parable with Stan Lee, and he did some, he did a book called Blueberry. But his art is, I'm kind of digging deep for this one, but his art is, it's just fantastic. I don't really know how to describe it to you, but Mobius had this way of drawing these pictures that had this incredible depth, but also, I mean, look at that. Look, there's just so much depth in that picture, also you're focusing on the right things. And he did a lot of sci-fi work. And, I mean, he just drew, like, these huge worlds.
Wow.
And, he was, it's hard to get his work here in America, I think. Because I think, like I said, he's either French or Belgian, I can't remember. But his stuff.
French artist.
French, yeah. His stuff was just so incredibly detailed. And just, I don't know, you have to Google it. So if you Google Mobius, he also worked on, I think he did some movies too, I don't know. But his work is just incredible. And it's just like, it captures these huge landscapes, but also makes them feel really manageable. You feel like you're present in the landscape.
Yeah.
The way that he was able to capture depth and everything.
Mm-hmm.
He just blows me away. I'm going to try and find his Batman work. Like, look at that Batman.
Oh, wow.
If I can click on it. So, and Mobius is another one that, if you know Mobius' work, you can just identify his work without even having to look at who drew the book.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I recommend checking out Silver Surfer Parable because that was written by Stan Lee and drawn by Mobius. And it's a, I'm going to say it's like 3 issues. So it's collected as like a little graphic novel, but it's really good.
Interesting. What era?
I want to say he was active in like the,
well, no, the Silver Surfer.
Oh, the Silver Surfer.
Was that 70s?
I want to say it was like the 90s, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. I want to say it was like the 90s. You know, the grooving 90s, yeah. As they're called.
As they're called, yes.
Now that I've dug deep into the reservoir of French artists that I'm sure everybody knows about.
Yeah.
Who have you got?
Let's go ahead and hit a couple of Italians.
Oh, all right.
Let's talk about Francisco Francavilla.
Yeah.
Francavilla.
Yeah.
Our friend, Mr. Nino.
Yes.
Knows about his art. We actually talked about, online one day about Francisco. Mostly now it seems like he only does, cover.
Yeah.
Cover art for comics. I just recently became enamored with him. His work with like horror scenes is just.
Did he do Afterlife with Archie?
Yes.
Okay.
Is just fantastic. Sorry, I had to move some books. It looked like they were getting bent. But yeah, it's and so now I found. So he did recently a book with Scott Snyder.
Oh.
I believe it was. Did I write it down? Well, he's done a lot of work with Scott Snyder. So the first time I became aware of him was his work on Black Mirror.
Yeah.
So him and do they pronounce it Jacques or Jock?
I think it's Jock.
Jock, who also worked on Black Mirror. That's the first time I really heard about him. And so Black Mirror, which we'll also talk when we talk about Scott Snyder on the other side, is just one of my favorite Batman stories. But it brings a lot of the horror into it. There's just some haunting scenes in the book and pages. And he captures that so well. And he's one of those ones where when you see a cover of a comic or a book, you're like, oh, that's got to be Francisco.
Yeah.
So, yeah, whenever I see his name, I always got to at least look through the book to see if he just did the cover or if it's the art, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I absolutely love him. And then the other one has worked with Jeff Lemire more recently. Andrea Sorrentino, he did Gideon Falls. Mm-hmm. He also did Primordial with Jeff Lemire. The artwork in both of those. The artwork in Gideon Falls is just amazing. All the artists, the colors and inkers, and it's just fantastic. If you haven't read Gideon Falls, you really need to. It's another one of those non-superhero books that's just, but it's got that kind of horror, haunting, supernatural type stuff going on. It can be hard to follow because there is some back and forth in time. So you really got to kind of keep up on that. He also did some work on Green Arrow. But yeah, he's one that I've recently been turned on to, and his artwork is just fantastic.
Very cool. I'm going to talk about another one who's a writer and an artist, but we'll talk about his art more, I think, and that's Frank Miller.
Ah, okay, yes.
Like, you know, I just went through that huge Frank Miller kick, and I was really studying a lot of his art. I was, you know, his writing is good, but I think his art is, well, I don't know. He's one of those guys that's like a total package, but like his art is so unique once he really cuts loose and becomes himself. Like, his run on, like, Daredevil kind of starts pretty straightforward, but then he really turns it into his own. And, obviously, Sin City, I think, is my favorite Frank Miller thing that I've read.
Yeah.
And the way he uses ink in Sin City is just completely bonzo. It's like...
No, you wonder how he even did it.
Yeah.
It's... How do you get the black and the white to look like that.
Yeah. So his art is, I would say his art is somewhat geometrical sometimes because it's not super tight in Sin City, but not in a bad way. But so his art to me is very inspiring. I've read some Daredevil, some Sin City, 300. And it's, you know, I don't think it's for everybody. Like, I feel like some people are going to be like, oh, Frank Miller's art. But I love his art, and I think it's unique. I think it is defining of his genres. Like, I think if somebody else had drawn Sin City, I don't think it would be Sin City as we know it. I think it really lends itself to the tone of Sin City. And, and, you know, his work with Klaus Johnson, too, maybe that's something I should save for later, because I wanted to maybe at the end when we're done maybe ask about some people who work together that are like ideal teams.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because yeah. I have a couple in mind.
Gotcha.
So,
on to piggyback to Frank Miller, yeah. One of my favorite Moon Knight covers, which is hanging over there on the wall,
yeah.
That actually is Frank. It's on the side of the beam. That is a Frank Miller cover.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's the only reason I bought it.
Frank Miller is great. I mean, he's as an artist, he's great. I don't know about him as a person. I can't.
Well, look, we're not here to debate that, are we?
That's true.
we're here to talk about the context of comics.
Yeah.
And nothing else.
Right. Good call.
Although I did leave someone off the list as far as writers go, just because of some of the stuff that came out about them.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I know.
Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. We won't bring them up. Okay. It's a shame because literally anything I've ever read by him, I absolutely loved. I thought it was very good. And yeah. But we're not going to talk about them. So,
if you're a creative, don't be a jerk.
Yes, right.
That's my advice to you.
Well, I want to go back in time a little bit since I talked about a couple of newer people and discuss Neil Adams.
Yes.
An absolute powerhouse in the comic industry. I don't think we could talk about this episode without talking about him. And, I mean, most of the people of my age, I mean, Batman is Neil Adams, right?
Yeah.
You know, he really defined him and how he looked and kind of changed him up and I don't know. Plus his team up with Denny O'Neil on Green Lantern and Green Arrow Adventures. I mean,
that was one of the couples I was going to talk about was Neil Adams and Denny O'Neil. Like they're to me like a certain era of DC is defined by those two guys.
Yes.
Working together.
Yeah, I was gonna bring them up too. We'll talk more about them later. But yeah, Neil Adams, and you know, set aside all the stuff that he did for artists, you know, through why am I having a brain fart? You know, he fought to get them their
creators' rights
and everything. There we go. Gosh. So yeah, he's just, but his Batman alone, you know, puts him on here.
Yeah,
I think. But yeah, his work on the Green Lantern, Green Arrow series.
Oh yeah, that series. That was one of the first comics I remember reading was Green Arrow, Green Lantern, and I was like way too young to understand the social.
Mm-hmm.
Aspect of it, but I was like, there's something here, I'm just not sure what it is, because I'm like nine. Know what I mean?
Exactly. It's one of those ones though, when you go back, because I was the same way when I read it. I was a little bit older when I read it, but still a lot of it flew over my head.
Yeah,
I just loved it because it was Green Arrow and Green Lantern together, and it just looked cool. Going back and reading it, and I've got the book right over there, you know, it just hits different.
Yep.
And you tie the subject matter with that beautiful art, and it's just gorgeous.
Yeah,
absolutely. The other older gentleman is George Perez, an absolute, if I may, titan in the industry. He wrote the new Titans, or drew the new Titans. Gosh, what else did he do? Avengers.
He did everything.
The dude.
If there was a comic that needed a group scene, like a bunch of people, it was, hey, get George on the phone.
Yeah, he could draw group scenes, multiples,
just so many people in one book. It was like,
and it looked so good.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so he with Marv Wolfman, did the new Teen Titans, but he did Avengers. He did so many other things.
Yeah.
He was also integral in the whole DC Marvel crossover.
Yeah.
So, which they've re-released that in graphic novel form, although those are quite expensive. But yeah, so, I mean, George Perez just, it's interesting, and we'll talk about, because, you know, I got a couple names up there. Yep. It's George Perez and Neil Adams are probably, besides Jim Aparo and Dick Giordano, I didn't know who they were back then.
Yeah.
Right? because I was just a kid reading comics and whoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
But they were the ones that I first saw with the stuff that they did. Whereas Jock and Francavilla and whatnot, they're ones that I'm aware of now. Sure. You know, I know what's going on.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting to compare the two. And then, you know, we've also got to temper, I think, at some point. We got to talk about how you really got to understand the differences in art styles.
Right.
Throughout the ages, right? I mean, you can't compare what they're doing now to what, you know, Jack Kirby was doing, who is on my list.
Yeah.
I mean, Jack Kirby's one of those guys. I mean, you know it immediately, right? I mean, that's...
Well, yeah, let's talk about him. He's the king, you know?
He is the king.
His work is so prolific, too. That's the thing, is like, he wasn't just doing a little bit of art, you know? I mean, I don't know the figure about how much art Jack Kirby... I heard it at one point, like, how much output he did. I couldn't remember it if I tried, but Jack Kirby's art defined modern superheroes. Well, he redefined superheroes.
Yes.
With Stan Lee, but, you know, it's like, that art is just, like, it just pops, and it, like, it almost punches you in the face.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
He co-created and wrote and drew and worked with so many of the characters that define the Marvel Universe and DC. He created the
New
Gods. He created the New Gods. You know, but I think he'll always be mostly remembered for his work with Marvel. But you know, because that really restarted everything and redefined the superhero age. I mean, the Fantastic Four by themselves, you know, kickstarted everything.
Yeah,
and his art is just so... it's so recognizable, and it's so, I don't know, it's just iconic.
Yes.
There's very few people in the industry that are like him, you know, if there's anybody else like him.
No, I don't know that anyone can. Although I will say our friend Mr. Nino, and I'm looking up at my Thunder the Barbarian poster, I mean, he captured the essence of the king in that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just beautiful. But yeah, it you were talking about DC, and I don't have it right now, and I still haven't located it, but Jack Kirby actually did early work on Green Arrow.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting to see that, because it was much more, it wasn't planted in the social justice,
right?
Like we know him now, which I think is a great journey for him. But his was much more superhero-y.
Yeah.
And then there was some sci-fi added in there, and he actually stopped writing it because they started having it. He wanted to take it in this even further pushed sci-fi direction, and they didn't like that. And that's actually, I think, when he left DC the first time, because they were having those differences.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, it all starts with him, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's so funny that you mentioned that, because, like, now that we know what we know about Jack Kirby in hindsight and everything, imagine being Marvel or DC and telling him no.
Yeah.
Because he really didn't get a lot of... His journey is kind of fraught, you know, like, because, you know, take it or leave it, you know, I'm not going to talk about this at length or anything, but, you know, the whole Stan Lee thing and the way that all shook out and everything, and, you know, Jack Kirby gets a lot of recognition now, but I don't know what it was like back then.
Mm-mm. Yeah,
you know, he was the artist, and he, you know, so he kind of had a journey where it was like, oh, I'm not happy with this, and I go over here, and I'm not happy with that. And he's the one who's very famously said, comics will break your heart. And I get that, you know. But it's just like, imagine, like, in hindsight, being like, oh, yeah, we're going to tell Jack Kirby what to do.
Yeah, exactly, right? Let's see, who else I got on here? Who do you have?
I want to talk about Brian Boland for a second.
There we go. I didn't have him written down. Okay. I was hoping you'd have him.
Yeah. Brian Boland is just another one that's so iconic.
Mm-hmm.
You can recognize his art from a mile away. You might know him for doing the Batman the Killing Joke. I'm really familiar with him for doing covers for 2000 AD for Judge Dredd.
Yep.
And I think he did some interiors for Judge Dredd. I think he was the one who did Judge Death, if I remember correctly. Brian Boland's artwork is just beautiful. It's art. It's capital A art. And he worked with Alan Moore a little bit, and just, he worked with a lot of people. And I think now he does a lot of cover work, or he did a lot of cover work. I don't know if he's still working.
You know what? I don't know.
But his cover work, he did, you would just know it if you saw it, you know, like, how old is Brian Boland?
He is 72 years old.
Woo!
I did not know that.
Yeah, his artwork, I mean, it's the color for him, too, you know, like, I don't know if he colored his own work, but his stuff
really... He did do Judge Death.
Yeah, okay.
That looks wicked. I've never heard of that.
Oh, you've never heard of Judge Death?
No.
Judge Death is from an alternate reality of Judge Dredd where life is a crime. And so he kills everybody that's alive.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's a great read.
I'm going to have to find that.
It's amazing.
He did Camelot 3000.
Yep.
Batman Black and White.
He did a lot of covers for, like, I want to say he did the Doom Patrol and he's just done a lot of work.
Yeah. Wow. He has done a lot. Golly.
Well, that's what happens when you live to be 72 and you're a prominent professional.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Brian Boland. Definitely look up his work. British author, so a British artist, so you're probably not as familiar with him if you're not like big into comics, even though he's a big name, you know, but he's big. I think he's a big name in the industry, but I don't know, maybe because he's British. Although I think he was part of the British invasion, maybe.
I would put him in with that. You might be askewed, though, because you do love Judge Dredd. So.
That's true. That's true. Temper what I say with the fact that I'm a huge Dredd fan.
Oh, gosh. Too funny. Who else you got?
I had somebody on the tip of my tongue, and I forgot.
Oh, no.
Alex Ross. You got Alex Ross?
I got Alex Ross, too.
Alex Ross, big deal. You might know Alex Ross for doing... Let me just say this. Alex Ross has painted his work.
Yeah.
The fact that he does anything besides covers, like he did the interiors for Kingdom Come.
Yep.
The fact that he can do that blows me away because his artwork is so detailed, so talented, and so painted that you're just like, there's no way that this guy's doing anything but covers. And I mean, I think he does covers now exclusively.
Yes.
But when he was doing like Astro City too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And man, it was just nuts. His work is just so, and he's one that mostly worked for DC, I think, and it's just so iconic. You have to see it. If you don't know it, then
I actually picked up a comic I had never heard of, but I picked it up because it was Alex Ross that did the art. U.S.
Oh, is this the one that's like the Freedom Fighters?
Sure. I haven't even cracked it open yet.
I don't know about this one, but I think I know that's Uncle Sam from the Freedom Fighters.
That is Uncle Sam from the Freedom Fighters, but I saw his name on there, and I mean, the cover's just pretty cool. Yeah, he's definitely, look, we're going to say this a ton. We already warned you we would, but if you delve into the realm of comics, there's no mistaking Alex Ross.
Oh yeah, he's one of a kind. Just fantastic.
It is unique. Kind of on the opposite side, you have, well, not opposite because that makes it sound negative, but like, he's not on my list, but he just popped in my head. Scotty Young.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know when you're looking at a Scotty Young cover or his art.
Yeah.
It is very distinct.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that's kind of what, I mean, Marvel, especially here recently, has just been doing a lot of Scotty Young
variant
covers. There we go. Thank you.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're just, it's wild because it's just so, is cartoonish the word I want to use?
I don't know. It's hard to define.
Yeah. His art is different.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
It is.
But yeah, so Yeah, good call on the Alex Ross. Yeah. I did have him. Another one where his stuff is always recognizable, I think, is Darwin Cook.
Oh, Darwin Cook. That's who I was thinking of, I think. Darwin Cook, great guy, great artist. Unfortunately, he's
no longer with
been
us.
Been gone for years now.
Yes.
But he, actually, Darwin Cook was one of my first introductions into collecting comics.
Oh.
Because he did The Spirit. He did a reboot of The Spirit.
Yep.
And I loved that series. Like, I could not get enough of that series. Mm-hmm. And he did Justice League New Frontier.
Yes.
Which is, like, probably his...
That's his seminal work.
Yeah, it's probably his most iconic work. And his work is just phenomenal. You know, it's really fun, and it's really it to me, it, like, when I was reading The Spirit, I was like, this is what a comic book should be.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I do not own, well, I own it digitally, and I've read it a couple of times, because it's just, it's great. And to take a character like that and make you want to reread it,
because
you know The Spirit's from what, like the 40s?
Yeah.
So,
well, that was also my first introduction to The Spirit. I didn't know who The Spirit was until Darwin Cook.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, because, I mean, I was a teenager, you know?
Yeah. So I'm like, pretty sure he also did a crossover with The Spirit and Batman.
Oh, probably.
And that was a really good read, too. I think it was a one-shot. But yeah, I had to mention Darwin. I actually, it was like a day after he passed, or 2 days after he passed. And I was at a Comic-Con in Hilliard, and someone had the collected issues. It wasn't the graphic novel. It was the collected issues of New Frontier, including some tie-ins, like, you know, Secret Files and whatnot. And the price he had on it was ridiculously low. I felt a little guilty. Even the guy said, I probably should have more on that now that he's passed. And I'm like, well, you should have more on it just because.
Right.
I mean, it was like, I think he charged me $10 or $8, something like that, for the whole collection. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. It's an absolute amazing read. They did an animated movie of it, which was fantastic too. But obviously there's so much more in the book run. That's... I don't know. Did we talk about that when we said superhero books you have to read?
We didn't. I don't think. I don't think so.
Well, we'll have to have a part two.
Yeah.
But so Darwin Cook, you gotta love him.
I think before we switch over to writers, the last person I want to talk about is Mike Mignola.
I was figuring you would talk about him, so I didn't put him on my list.
I absolutely love him. If you're not familiar with the name, he's the guy who created Hellboy. Obviously,
we may have talked about him a couple times. We might have
talked about Hellboy. I'm obviously a pretty big mark for Hellboy. Mike Mignola, got to see him in conversation once.
Oh.
At the Wexner Center, I think. It was somewhere on campus at OSU. And just a great guy, but his art is just so unique. Like, you know, even if it's not Hellboy, you know when you're looking at Mike, because he did Gotham by Gaslight.
He did Gotham by Gaslight.
He did The Amazing Screw-On Head.
Mm-hmm.
He's done some other stuff for DC, too. I think there's like a whole book of his DC Universe by Mike Mignola.
He'll do a lot of variant covers for books, too.
Yeah. He did a He-Man
He did, book. Which I have, yeah. That's, so, it was that's a cool cover.
His art is just, to me, it's just so iconic and inspiring.
Yes.
And you can tell, like, a whole generation of comic book readers have come to be inspired by his drawing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I gotta talk about Bernie Wrightson.
Yes.
And in the same breath, Kelly Jones.
Yes.
So, Bernie Wrightson, Swamp Thing, but his horror stuff is just...
It's amazing.
Absolutely amazing. The last thing he was working on before he passed was this Frankenstein story.
Yes.
That was absolutely... The story itself was just amazing. The art was phenomenal. The way he draws things is just... It's not gory. It's not...
Right. It's not over the top in any way.
No, but it's just... you get so much feeling from it, and it's still just like, whoa. It's not vulgar horror. Right. It's just...
It's like classic horror. Like, yes. When I think of classic monsters being illustrated, I think of Bernie Wrightson.
Yeah. And then Kelly Jones, because he passed before... Because Bernie Wrightson passed before he could finish, Kelly Jones came in. I believe he worked on the second half of the last book is what they had to do. And even though he tried, you could still tell that it was Kelly Jones. Because Kelly Jones is one of those ones.
He's so unique.
It is.
He's got his own brand of horror.
You know? Yeah. And he did a run on Batman. Was he doing Batman for Doug Mensch?
Oh, man, I don't remember.
Oh, gosh, I forget now. But, yeah, his Batman is just very distinct.
Yeah, and he's got the longest ears in the game.
Oh, my gosh, it is fantastic. I picked up a Dead Man book written by Mike Barron, and Kelly Jones did the art. And I literally just, I picked it up because the cover was just, it's a three-issue series. But Kelly Jones, they're horror. Kelly Jones did... Kings of Fear. It was a Batman story and just wild. I do want to throw out before we switch. You got the Romitas.
Yep.
Senior and junior, especially senior icon.
Yeah.
We didn't mention Steve Ditko, co-creator of Spider-Man. Also did some stuff for US1. Woohoo. But yeah, so we could go on and on about the artists, but hey, I'm going to turn the page.
All right.
Do we want to start with Jeff Lemire again, since that's how we started artists?
I don't know. Do you want to, we spent a lot of time on artists.
We did. This, you know what? Look, guys, this, we try to stay around an hour. Maybe this one does an hour and 10. Who knows?
Whoever you want to start with.
Well, let's start with Jeff Lemire. Okay. Look, we've talked about him a lot in other episodes. He's one of the ones. So here's how I try to, and I kind of alluded to this with you. When I was writing this, or when I was making my list, when I say favorite writers, to me, if I see their name on a book, I'm going to buy it, rent it, read it digitally, whatever, just because their name's on it.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people have people like that. Jeff Lemire is one of those guys for me.
Definitely.
If I see his name's on a project, okay, I'm going to give it a go no matter what. Colin Bunn is another one. So Jeff Lemire, you know, he did Sweet Tooth. He did an amazing run on Moon Knight that I think gets lost.
So good.
Because of everything. Because this man puts out more stuff.
He's prolific.
He is. You know, you got all his indie stuff that we talked about. Essex County, Underwater Welder. He did a book called Frog Catcher, Royal City, Black Hammer, which we talked about in a previous episode. Gideon Falls, Primordial. I believe there's one called Maze Book. Family Tree. He did a miniseries, Swamp Thing, for the DC Black Label. He did the New 52 Animal. The dude's all over. He did the Terrifics, I think, for DC. I see his name. He's one. I'm going to at least read one thing.
Yeah.
And then decide. Because, you know, they're all good. There's just some that are much better than others.
Sure.
Colin Bunn's the same way. I know we've talked about him. Harlan County. Harrow County. Excuse me. Harlan County. Harrow County. He also did Empty Man, Cold Spots. He also did a small short run of Moon Knight. It was much shorter than Jeff Lemire's.
Oh, yes, I remember that now.
But it was really good. So he does, Colin Bunn almost exclusively now seems like he just does the horror suspense stuff. Yeah. He has done stuff for Marvel, that wasn't. Those are two guys that, no matter what the project, I'm going to give it a read. The rest of these guys are ones that have had books I really enjoyed, but I don't know that just because their name's on it, I'm
You're going to buy it.
I'm going to buy it. Does that make sense? Yeah, definitely. And it's not a slight against them. It's just, well, you know, we'll see.
Right.
But yeah, so go ahead with.
Well, I'm going to start with the big one.
Yeah.
Because he's my favorite. Yeah. And he's the most influential person in my comic book writing career, which is Alan Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I took a masterclass from Alan Moore once.
Yes. So,
well, it was not a masterclass. It's a Maestro, which is BBC's version of masterclass. So Alan Moore, pretty famous. Obviously, he wrote Watchmen, V for Vendetta, From Hell. And he's got a lot of really underrated stuff that I like the Bo Jeffrey saga, which is a comedy. So I don't think people talk about it very much because they're not used to him writing. But he's actually quite funny. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yes.
I mean, I could name all his stuff that inspired me. From Hell, I think, is, you know, everybody says Watchmen is the greatest graphic novel of all time, but you got to read From Hell if you want to see what comics can really do. Read From Hell. But his work is just so iconic. He also had a run on Miracle Man, which is just crazy. It's just completely out there. Top 10, which is really good. I don't know if you know that one.
I do not.
Top 10 is basically like a police force full of superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. It's so fun. But I could go on and on about Alan Moore. He's the guy. Oh, and of course,
I was going to say, wait a minute.
Swamp Thing. the book that launched 1,000 hotcakes was Swamp Thing. I was reading that in one time and I just thought, wow, this is it. Like, I'm going to do this. So, yeah, Swamp Thing is probably the most influential comic I've ever read because it really started me on my career as a comic book creator. But his work is just so, I mean, it's just defining of the medium. There's really nobody that I can compare to Alan Moore. Now, I know he's a bit of a crank in real life, or cranky, I should say, in real life. But what can you do?
It's, you know, it happens.
It happens.
It happens.
Some of his stuff is better than others. It's funny because, like, I credit him as being, like, the best of the best.
Uh-huh.
But also there was a Spawn versus Wildcats crossover that he wrote, and that's one of the worst things I've ever read.
Oh, so, wow.
But he's also got, if you have the chance, and I know I see it right there, actually, the DC Universe by Alan Moore.
Yeah.
Is great. It's got a lot of really good stories in there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, his work is just, it's defining for me as a person and as the industry as a whole. And I think his writing he's not really writing comics anymore, but his influence is still felt because of Watchmen.
I forgive me if you did mention it, but because you mentioned Brian Bolan and The Killing Joke, Alan Moore wrote that.
Yes, so. He did write The Killing Joke.
So.
Yeah, his resume is quite large.
Yes. There's so much. What was the one miniseries I picked up when I was with you that I had never heard of? It was like 5 or 6 issues. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I'll have to go look at it. Anywho. Yeah. Gosh. Who else do I want to put on there? You know what I forgot to mention, and I'll tie this in. So Jeff Lemire also did a run on Old Man Logan.
Yes, that's
which
right.
Which was absolutely fantastic. Yeah. But...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Bring it home.
Mark Millar is the one who started Old Man Logan. So Old Man Logan, if anyone doesn't know, it's you're way into the future.
Right.
And the world is kind of, you know, a wasteland. And you've got a tribe of Hulks that are kind of running the area. And then... It's just, God, it's such a great story. But Mark Millar has done that. He did Superman Red Son, which is probably my favorite Superman story.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Look, I know you and I have talked about this before. I'll read Superman stuff. I'm not...
Yeah.
I'm just not invested in Superman stuff.
True.
Although the Lois and Clark adventures... From what was that, like 6-7 years ago?
Yeah,
I forget who wrote that. That was really good. But he does a lot of, you know, indie stuff too. He's got the Millarverse.
Yeah.
He did Kick-Ass. He did The Kingsman.
Yep.
He did a sci-fi story that I absolutely love called Reborn. So he's one that when I see his name, I'm intrigued, and I'll give it a look. I don't know that it's the same reaction as like Colin Bunn or Jeff Lemire, but it's like usually he does some pretty solid stuff. And he's kind of all over the place as far as different things. So which is what I appreciate. You know, he's not a one trick. Right. This is the only kind of stuff, kind of like with Alan Moore's all over the place. Yeah. And most of these people are Jeff Lemire, you know, he's does all kinds of things. But yeah, Mark Millar was next on my list. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go with the next one. The late, great influencer of my life, Steve Gerber. If you are unfamiliar with the name, Steve Gerber created Howard the Duck. He also did Omega the Unknown, which is just a wild ride. And he did some other stuff, some Man-Thing. He wrote a lot of Man-Thing. But Steve Gerber is a personal hero of mine. I almost feel like he's like a cult comic book writer because like he's not super well-known. To my knowledge, he's not super well-known. Like, he's not like a household name like Stan Lee.
Correct.
But he, to me, his writing is just so out there. Like, Howard the Duck especially is so existential.
Yes.
It really helped me define what I wanted to do. And Omega the Unknown, like I said, that's a pretty wild ride. It got canceled, so he was like, let's do it. Let's do it to it. And he also did Stuart the Rat and Destroyer Duck. Great writer, I think. Totally underappreciated in my book.
Co-created Man-Thing, right? No? Yes? No?
I can't remember if he co-created... I know he wrote Man-Thing, but I don't remember if he co-created Man-Thing.
Well, I thought Man-Thing appeared first in Howard the Duck.
Other way around, Howard the Duck first appeared in Man-Thing.
Oh, there we go. There we go. No, co-creator.
Okay. Yep, Steve Gerber. Steve Gerber. Yep, yeah.
Steve Gerber, Stan Lee, Roy Thomas, Jerry Conway. Yeah. They made a movie for Man-Thing?
Oh, yeah, it's terrible.
Okay.
It's terrible.
I did not know. Ted Salas.
Yeah, Ted.
Teddy.
You know who we have to talk about before we run out of time?
Yeah.
The beautiful, bald bloke from Scotland.
Yeah.
Grant Morrison. Here,
he's on my list.
Okay. Grant Morrison is another prolific weirdo. He, to me, closest to my heart is for the Doom Patrol from the 80s. Which is just my one of my favorite runs of any book ever. But he also did a fantastic, and we've talked about this before, but he did a fantastic run on Animal Man. With some of the most out there. Although when he did Animal Man, he had hair.
Oh, yes.
Because he appears in the book with hair.
Yes.
So don't hold that against him because he does look... He's one of those dashing bald guys. But Grant Morrison, just totally weird.
Yes. So he also did Arkham Asylum.
Yes. A serious place on a serious earth.
Yep. He did... more recently, he did a Green Lantern
run. Yeah, that was fun.
That was fun. He did a Batman run. He also did Batman and Robin. He also wrote All-Star Superman, correct?
Yes, which, he did.
Now that I say that, that's Red Sun Superman, excuse me, are probably 1 and 1A.
Yeah.
So here's the thing with Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
And you and I have talked about this many a times. It is either feast or famine with him for me.
Yeah.
It is like, I'll read something like Animal Man, and I'm just like, wow. And then I'll read something, gosh, what was it? It was a Bruce Wayne story. Lost in Time
Batman RIP.
Yeah.
When he came back or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah, like, that was a bit weird.
It's like, oh, no. That's, and didn't he do All-Star Batman 2?
No, that was Frank Miller.
That was Frank Miller.
We don't talk about that one.
We don't talk about that one. Yeah, that one was, but anywho, I have learned though with Grant Morrison, and here's my tip to all you non-Grant Morrison fans out there.
Yeah.
Or don't know who he is. Don't buy a single issue by Grant Morrison.
You got to read the whole story.
Buy the graphic novel.
Yes.
Buy the book. because it'll make more sense and it'll congeal. It's almost like binging a series on Netflix. Yes,
you
these
have
days.
To see the whole picture.
You have to see the whole picture. When he hits it out of the park, man, it is out of the park. Yeah. It is amazing. But boy, it can get a little out there.
Yeah.
Love him though.
I like him. I like weird stuff.
Yeah.
Like The Invisibles is another thing he did, and that's just completely out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I won't deny. I picked up a graphic novel. I haven't read it yet. Proctor Valley Road.
Yeah.
By him. I'm looking forward to that because it seems like something that he hasn't done before.
Right.
You know, it's the theme, the plot, the characters. I don't know. It seems interesting. But, yeah, Grant Morrison. There we go. I figured we'd talk about him.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Waid.
Underrated.
Yes. Yes. He did. We already mentioned Kingdom Come.
Yep.
That was probably my first introduction to him.
Yeah, I read Kingdom Come when I was really young.
So. Yeah. I know we've talked about his Archie run.
Yep.
On here before, which was absolutely fantastic.
Amazing.
He did a run on Daredevil 2 that was great.
Yes.
He's
done a lot of stuff. I don't think people credit him enough for how much work he's put out.
Correct. I would agree. I put him right there with Mark Millar for me, where mm-hmm. it's like, ooh, I see his name. It's like, ooh. And, you know, I'll kind of give it a look. I won't maybe knee-jerk buy it.
Yeah.
But it's like, I want to see that. Charles Soule's the same way for me. He did Letter 44, Curse Words, which Curse Words was just fun. He teamed up with Scott Snyder and did Undiscovered Country, which was a really good read. I only read the first volume, but I enjoyed the heck out of it. My first introduction to Charles Soule, though, was he worked on the Swamp Thing New 52 run.
Did he?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, him and Scott Snyder.
Wow.
Yeah. Absolutely loved it, but he also did a Daredevil run. But the thing I love most from him probably is his Darth Vader run. His Darth Vader run for Marvel was just fantastic. He also, Charles Soule, although some of these others maybe have done it, he writes regular books too for grown-ups.
Yeah.
One of which I have down there, but I haven't read yet. But he's usually one, if I see his name, it's kind of like, oh, okay, maybe. Let's give it a look, because it's usually pretty solid.
Yeah.
I'm just going to start rapid firing some of these. I got to talk about James Tynion in the fourth.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've read anything by him that was bad. He's done Batman. He's done a lot of indie stuff. Wind, which I know we've talked about.
Yeah.
Something is Killing the Children. Oh, I picked up one the other day where he's kind of retelling historical supernatural stories, like UFO sightings and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Didn't he also do, there's a miniseries, Last House on the Lake, I think is what it's called. I haven't finished it because it started right at the time when my reading was starting to dwindle.
Yeah.
And then I have the complete series. I just haven't finished it. And it was amazing. I read like the first 7 issues. But yeah, he just does some solid stuff. I really enjoy him a lot. He's almost to the level where if I see his name on it,
he'll get there, I think.
Yeah, because he's just solid. So's Tom King. I know he's kind of hit and miss with some people, but his Batman run, I really enjoyed. The Mr. Miracle was a fantastic read. My buddy Chuck suggested The Human Target, which I didn't know Tom King did a did a run on, but he says it's absolutely amazing. So he's pretty good. Scott Snyder, of course, does all kinds of stuff. All kinds of stuff. I mean, I've noticed that he kind of either people like him or they don't. Yeah. I enjoy most of his stuff. that one graphic novel I picked up a few weeks ago, Noctera, was really good. I thought it was enjoyable, but he did that amazing run on Batman, introduced the Court of Owls, really brought a different kind of feel to the Batman mythos. He did the Gates of Gotham, but he also did American Vampire and Witches, and he did Death or Dark Metal. But yeah, he did Undiscovered Country with Charles Soule. So I usually, if I see his name, it's like, oh, well, this could be good. Who else you got? I've been talking a lot. I'm sorry, man.
No, it's all right. I want to throw out my love for Al Ewing.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I haven't read a ton by him, but he's getting to the point where he's one of those guys that if I see his name on it, I'll read it. Specifically because of The Immortal Hulk, which is one of my favorite series of the last 10 years. I don't often read ongoing comics, but boy, did I read that. I read it from start to finish.
Yeah.
Al Ewing, great writer, great horror writer. He's doing The Immortal Thor right now, which hasn't been collected, so I'm waiting for that to happen.
I know we talked about his indie title, They Only Find You When You're Dead.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. He also did some one-shots for Marvel for some kind of celebration, and they were fantastic. He used little-known characters from like the 60s. One was a Western, and then he did a horror one too. He's great.
He's great, and he's pretty versatile. He works a lot for Marvel. He did Ant-Man. He did Guardians of the Galaxy. But those are all very different characters, you know, Hulk. So I'd love to meet him at some point because I just want to know how he described some of the panels for Immortal Hulk.
Yes.
The body horror specifically. I want to know how you did it.
Yeah. The Immortal Hulk was an amazing read. That came out of nowhere. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. Oh, golly. Another newer guy is Tom Taylor.
Yeah.
Who I've really enjoyed. He did The World of Deceased, which if anyone doesn't know, you know, the anti-life whatever infected Earth. And if you watched any kind of technological device, it infected you. And it just, man, it hit the fan. and the first run was absolutely amazing. They came out with the second run. I'm like, come on. The first one, why would you want to? But nope, second one was good. The third one was good. It was a whole story. It was fantastic. He wrote a miniseries called Batman Detective, which I really enjoyed. But I do want to talk about, he did a run on Spider-Man. And I've not read a whole lot of newer Spider-Man. I'm trying to think who did the run I read a few years ago, the Amazing Spider-Man run, where Peter Parker's a little bit older. He's kind of like Tony Stark.
Dan Slott.
There we go. But this one singular issue was Spider-Man was... He granted a wish for a terminally ill kid. And oh my gosh, the issue was just amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, it doesn't make you love Spider-Man. What would?
Yeah.
But yeah, Tom Taylor's one of those guys. He's kind of climbing up that ladder where, you know, he puts out some solid stuff. But yeah, so is Benjamin Percy. He does a lot of stuff with Marvel, but he did Green Arrow Year One, which was fantastic. He's doing a run on Ghost Rider right now. He did that. He did the adaptation of the Wolverine podcast.
Oh yes, that's right.
Which was fantastic. He's done some stuff for AWA called Year Zero and Devil's Highway, which was really good. He's kind of getting there. Jed McKay, who's doing Moon Knight right now.
Yeah. A lot of good creatives out there right now.
There are. I tell you what, and it's got to be because you can just keep doing more and more with comics, right? Yeah. You used to be, now this is all you can do. Right. You know, it's tights.
Yeah.
Superheroes and tights. You know, you'd have the occasional question, which Denny O'Neill did the question. But now there's just with with Image and Dark Horse and Boom and Aftershock and all these studios allowing you to kind of create your own, it's just really opened the door for all this stuff that we maybe wouldn't have seen, you know, 30 years ago.
Right. Well, and you got, you know, you have to say, like, people like Jack Kirby, Alan Moore, Grant Morrison, they just keep pushing. They push the envelope and they push the envelope. And they opened up the door. And then people come and they see what has been done before. And they're like, what can we do next?
Yep.
So, you agreed. Know, the pioneers of the format are, you know, your Will Eisners especially. And your, your Art Spiegelmans and your Scott McClouds and Joe Kubert, of course. I met him once.
Did I tell you that?
Yeah, nice guy. Super nice guy. Nice. It was at Mid Ohio Con right before it became Wizard World.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's just something else. Let's talk about the team ups though.
Okay. So the one that I want to talk about was Frank Miller and Klaus Janson.
Yes.
They worked on Daredevil together and what else did they? They worked on stuff. Dark Knight Returns.
Yes.
Everything Dark Knight Returns they worked on together. And Klaus Janson is an unsung hero because he's an inker. And I think some of Frank Miller's best work comes from his inking. And so, to me, they're a team that's like, yeah, that's a no-brainer.
Who worked with Alan Moore on Swamp Thing?
Steven Bissett was the first guy, and then I think there was somebody else.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I couldn't remember. I will agree with you. So, Frank Miller's best stuff, I think, comes from working with him.
Yeah.
With Klaus.
Yeah. Klaus Janson is just an unsung creator as in general. He worked on Black Panther, Howard the Duck. I mean, he worked on so much stuff.
Yeah.
And people just don't know it because he's the inker, you know?
Yeah.
But his work with Frank Miller is phenomenal.
I would agree. I would agree. We mentioned Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams. I mean, what else can we say? That the Green Lantern, Green Arrow is just such a important, especially now when you look back on it. It's just amazing the importance that run had.
Yeah.
And then the stuff that they were tackling in that time.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw out an odd one, though.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
Yeah.
And that's going to be Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray.
Yeah.
I discovered them after I'd started getting back into comics again, but they had that run on All-Star Western, New 52 with Jonah Hex, which is an absolutely amazing run. And they did some Ghost Rider stuff too.
Yeah.
Now Jimmy Palmiotti, is kind of one of those guys that's you could look at either way, a writer or an inker, because you know he did a lot of stuff. His stuff in the 90s is very memorable, I guess. I mean, you sit there and go, yeah, all right. But at least he's evolved.
Yeah.
You know who we didn't mention in all of this?
Who?
Was Todd McFarlane.
Yeah, Todd McFarlane. Well, you know, he's another one that's an artist and a writer. But his artwork is so gnarly. I would say his artwork is better for me than his writing.
Yes.
But his artwork is so gnarly. Him and Greg Capullo drawing Spawn.
Greg Capullo. Oh my gosh, I forgot about him. His work on Batman.
Yeah,
my gosh.
I saw him draw a Ghost Rider the other day, and I was like, nobody draws a chain like this man.
Yeah.
Because Ghost Rider has chains, Spawn has chains. But Todd McFarlane, interesting guy, entrepreneur, man after my own heart.
Yeah.
So
what's interesting to me is his art style encapsulates what the 90s were, right?
Yeah.
Like his covers for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Are just, I mean, I get it, they're iconic, and especially for people of a certain age.
Sure.
Because they still, most comics in the 90s just are kind of throwaways, right? Because they're just mass-produced and stuff. But his covers still, people go after him. And then, what's the guy's name? I've actually got one of his covers over there. Platt is his last name.
Oh, I don't know.
He did some of the covers for Moon Knight. It's that bottom one there. And he's just very much in the McFarlane vein where it's just so over the top and so gregarious. And it's almost like, I akin his work, it's like McFarlane and what's the Deadpool guy?
Rob Liefeld
had a baby, and that's that dude. That's funny. Yeah, I don't know. It's just wild. The 90s was an interesting time.
Oh yeah,
all the foil covers and all the just the art was bigger than life, almost to cover up some of the stores.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm glad the stores have caught up with the art.
Yeah.
but you know, the art helps make it, right? You can forgive a story that maybe isn't as strong if the art can carry it.
Yeah.
Because then it helps tell the story, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's... Let me ask you this before we stop. Because I think this is important to tie all this together, at least in my mind. What turns you off the book faster? A weak story or... Meh, art.
Honestly, because I'm more of a writer, I think it's the story.
Okay.
Because I can stomach a lot of art.
Uh-huh.
But boy, if a story isn't good, or if the lettering is bad.
I was going to say, the lettering probably, I should have added a third thing.
Yeah.
But when they use the cursive font, that just ticks
me off.
That
was exactly what I was thinking. But I think I can forgive an artist... It's funny because it is a visual medium, so the art should turn you off faster. But I think I look at comics kind of like with Grant Morrison. I look at them as a whole.
Yeah.
In the long run, it's the story I think that's going to turn me off.
Interesting.
More.
Interesting.
I think that just does come from me being a writer more though than anything.
I get that. I think nowadays I would agree with you there. Yeah. When I was younger, I think it was probably the art because.
Sure.
I want to look cool. I still want to look cool. I look at the art. I guess it depends on the type of book. Like, if it's a horror book, if they can nail that art,
yeah,
then I'm okay with the story. Because then, at least I've got this cool stuff to look at, and it really helps the story.
Yeah.
But yeah, if it's more of a character-driven, then you've got to have the story.
Well, you know, the other thing for me is, like, when I started drawing my own comics, I started to decide that, like, art is so, like, drawing art is so subjective that there's no bad art.
Mm-hmm.
But with writing, it's like there is bad writing.
There is bad writing.
I don't know why. It's just something that just feels like that to me.
But, you know, sometimes the art doesn't match.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, and I wonder where that disconnect comes, or it's like, oh, that just doesn't feel right. Maybe it's the colors, or maybe it's just the tone they create with the stories. But sometimes the art can overpower the story too, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's just so grand that, you know, you lose. There's been many times where I've been reading something and then I'm so struck by what I'm looking at that I kind of lose track of what I was reading and I had to go back and read it over again.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I don't know. Boy, I know there's a lot of people that we could have missed. I didn't even talk about Mike Grell. Shame on me. Yeah, I mean, hopefully we get a lot of people chiming in. If you're into comics, who's some of your go-to writers or artists who when you see their name on a book, do you go, okay, yeah, I'm going to check that out. You know who else we didn't talk about? Sergio.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, man.
Man, we're going to have to do a part two.
We're going to have to do a part two.
Or we could do one that's like completely just cartoonist as a whole, because I didn't talk about any comic strip artists. I didn't talk about Stan Sakai, Sergio Aragonés.
Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Cartoonists.
Yep.
I like that. But yeah, so hey, hit us up on Instagram or on the Meta Facebook.
The Meta Facebook?
Yeah.
Unless it goes down again like it did that other day.
Oh, my goodness. I tell you what. Maybe one day we'll create a TikTok.
We should, although TikTok's about to be banned.
Yeah, so maybe we should before it goes away. Anyways, but yeah, let us know who are some of your go-to writers and artists, and who did we not talk about that we should. You know, we probably will have to do a part two because, there's just so much to talk about here. There's so many good people out there. But yeah, so man, sorry that it went a little bit longer than normal, but boy, this was a good one.
It was
so,
a great one.
All right, guys, we'll catch you on the flip side and stay nerdy. Oh,